Hello and welcome to The Awakening, audio reading for Sagittarius, recording on Boxing Day 2024 at about 2 in the afternoon, on a very bright, very cold day here in Kingston, New York. So let's see, where to begin? Oh wait, I had some notes I sent myself in an email. I'm trying to at least get my opening down to a few planned thoughts. By the way, I am experiencing a little bit of respiratory distress, so I am not speaking with the usual basso profundo voice, and can't really project too strongly, so I'm going to stay close to the microphone, but I suspect that you will be able to hear what I'm saying, but it'll more resemble a loud whisper than anything else. All right. So one thing I was reflecting on, taking the occasion as I do to reconsider my interpretation of the sun signs each time I write one of these annual editions. And I can never keep straight which it is. I think this is the 26th annual, which tend to contain a lot of ideas about the sun signs, which are, of course, they're a theme of astrology that the proper astrologers don't like very much because, you know, you're supposed to have birth time and all that. But with the sun signs, studying the sun signs is really studying the entire horoscope, the zodiac, without the need for any planets, and just looking at the way that the signs relate to one another. And for those of you who study music, for those of you who study music, this is a study in the modes. It is modal. There are 12 chromatic notes in the Western scale. And by some shocking coincidence, there are 12 stages in the astrological wheel, and they date historically to about the same time in ancient Greece, approximately 400 BC. And so I suspect that they're basically expressions of the same thing. And the modes are this very interesting phenomenon in music where you can get a whole other result within one key if you start in a different place in the scale degree, it's called. So if you start in the fifth scale degree, that's mixed Lydian, and it really is a different sound. And so when we do sun sign astrology, we're looking at the exact same chart with all the same notes and planets, though I make slight modifications, especially for Sagittarius, which I'm going to get to in a second, and count scale degrees. So if we start with Sagittarius, which we were doing, we come to the fifth scale degree. That is Aries, Aries. And this is taking all of this wild, concentrated development of 2025 and 2026 and putting it in one of the most creative and dynamic and expressive houses, for example. And this can, you know, for Capricorn, this is going to show up in the fourth place. I don't know what I'm going to say about that. It's a little easier to read in the fifth, but that's how this is done. So one of the things about Sagittarius, which I know from having known a lot of people born with strong Sagittarius chart signatures, is that for the freewheeling, rambling, wild reputation that Sagittarius has, actually, people born under the sign tend to be some of the most conservative people that I know. And I mean, I don't mean that they you know, I'm not talking about conservative politics. I'm talking about personally conservative and reserved, though the mark of conservatism in the political sense is, do you favor the concentration of state power? So that's another question. So the personal conservatism, the reserve and the surprising viewpoints that contradict the supposedly very open-minded descriptions of Sagittarius that you get in astrology books make a very interesting contrast. And the unusual thing about Sagittarius, as I like to mention as many times and places as I can, is that for what Sagittarius represents, which is things that are very far away, exotic, inherently spiritual or divine in nature, philosophical, and so on. Sagittarius has physical elements located right there that are about this, the Great Attractor and the Galactic Center. The focal point of approximately 100,000 galaxies in various different forms of the local group, and then way out to essentially everything anywhere near us. And then the core of our own galaxy is located in Sagittarius as well. And I think that this describes not only the psyche of Sagittarius people, but also something of the kind of earthly crisis that Sagittarians live, being essentially strangers in a strange land. Aquarius sometimes gets the props for being the most extraterrestrial of the signs. I don't think so. I think that designation would go easily 100% to Sagittarius. And this creates some tension between you and the world. The sense of potentially being a visitor from very far away, or if not being one, feeling like one. Feeling like things are a little bit strange here. And, you know, you wonder, like, what exactly you're doing here. And one of the ways to handle that is to be extremely reserved, to do what you can to stay on the side of power and influence, described by Capricorn in your second place. Potentially to stay very close to family traditions, ideation, and values. Again, Capricorn on the second place. And yet, though that may have worked for a while, right now you are in a whole different stage of life. There's a whole new... Everything is... different. Everything is different partly because Pluto has just seemingly overnight since 2008 come and gone from Capricorn. Incredible how quickly that went by, isn't it? George W. Bush was still president when Pluto entered Capricorn. I think of things in terms of who was president. I know it's a little weird, but this... Pluto entered Capricorn so far ago that it was the year of the who was running against it was Obama versus McCain. That's what was going on. Remember, McCain suspended his campaign to rush back to Washington to deal with the financial crisis like a senator could actually do anything. Anyway, that was like, that was so long ago that you can buy those newspapers in antique shops, like $500 on eBay. And this has left behind it a trail of dust and debris. And where this has, this pulverizing action has taken place has been in your house of values, your sense of your personal assets, your respect for yourself, a very important theme of the second house. Self-esteem. It says that's a really weird term. Do you know where self-esteem, the term self-esteem comes from? Phrenology, reading the bumps on the head. When I trace the etymology of that, it would seem that the word is picked up by psychology from head bump reading. Phrenology. So I'm leery of using that word too casually. Esteem, like what is it? Is the word esteem used to describe anything other than self-esteem? And then how do we have any context for it? So self-respect, valuing oneself, and generally, by the way, I mean our parents are typically the worst conceivable models for self-esteem. That's most of their problem. So anyway, Pluto has just, done its thing here and has forced you to go through a constant reevaluation and reassessment of basically your assets. Second house is, it's your pots and pans, like going all the way back in astrology. It's your, your rug, it's all the stuff in your hut. That you can carry around, tools of the trade, available cash. But in the age of psychological astrology, it's the foundation of one's respect for oneself. And it's not easy having Capricorn here, because the illusion that Capricorn is going to present is that if you are like the old folks, you will be respectable and therefore respected. But you're not really like the old folks. You have a lot of your own ideas about life. And where your moon falls is going to make a distinction here. But that conservatism hinted at by the second house, for one thing, has changed quite a bit in the past 15, 16 years of Pluto and Capricorn. And second, the movement of like free floating energy is going to ramp up so fast that no one's going to really understand what hit them, unless of course you're listening to these readings and entertaining yourself during the holiday with me talking about okay, spring 2025, ooh, then spring 2026, even better. And you've experienced part of this as Pluto entering Aquarius. Now, this has been teasing its way in since March of 23. It made a double ingress, which is very unusual for an outer planet. Pluto is only 248 years. Even Sedna, which has an orbit of 11,400 years, just made the usual ingress from Taurus, Gemini, retrograde back into Taurus, and enter Gemini, and that's it. So for some reason, we got this really protracted, gradual entry of Pluto into Aquarius. And this is obsessive. Aquarius is mental. Your third place is mental. Everybody's third place is mental. It's how you think, how you communicate. It includes things like how you like to shop, where you like to shop, who you meet in the process of doing your local commerce, relationships with siblings, neighbors. Think of the third house as being like the kind of villa. Like, imagine in Sicily, you know, the family has an extended villa, and maybe there's like several branches of the family, and everyone lives on like a 20-acre thing, and you're either in the family, you're not in the family, and then all that goes on inside the villa is the third house, which is largely self-sufficient. There's farming going on, and there's deliveries being made that might serve everyone and so forth. It's got its own water. That's the third. It's also like the extended farm family, where several siblings might have had adjoining houses on one farm and both farmed the land together. The old folks, Ma and Pa lived in their own house, so forth. That's the third. But in our modern version of astrology, that translates to neighbors, local commerce, communication style, mental state. Pluto's here. Well, that's a heck of a dose of some powerful substance. Pluto is almost always obsessive, and it is almost always deep. And having spent the better part of 16 years in Capricorn, it wants a little more freedom, and it's going to find that freedom in Aquarius, for better or for worse. Pluto has been kind of burrowing underground through Capricorn. It's kind of been digging this tunnel underneath the ground, or like honeycombing out a mountain to extract the ore. And then the mountain is not really a mountain anymore. It's just a thing that's standing there. It looks kind of like a mountain, but instead it's been destabilized, and it's been destabilized because there's been so much material blasted out of the interior. And we might ask what this has to do with how you feel about yourself. What has been that journey? What have you experienced in the way of changes to how you regard yourself? Feel for the self-esteem bump, but you know where it is. It's a little bit on to the left. And so I'm curious what you would account for the major changes there. And also, one measure here is, what was your cash position in 2008, and what is your cash position today? How are you doing? How are you doing financially? What's your available cash level? Very important thing. One of the good things about Pluto going through the second or the fourth, regardless of what sign they're located in, is that they both drive independence and self-sufficiency. Now, these are largely illusory, but there is a more self-sufficient spirit and a less self-sufficient spirit. There's more a, I'm going to fix this myself kind of a spirit. I've got what I need, or, I need help from everyone. Pluto second and Pluto fourth tend to really concentrate self-sufficiency. And then now, that's done. Pluto's in your third place. And I think that that Aquarius in the third describes what you get when you meet many Sagittarian people more than many other things, which is a friendly demeanor, but also someone who is kind of brainy. So you don't necessarily come off like Yoda, speaking in backward sentences. You come off like an intelligent, conversant person, underneath which there may be a level of reserve and conservatism, and then going back into your first place, Sagittarius, we find out that what is there is not really that accessible. There's no way to even get to those places. Great Attractor is like, you know, 250 million light years away. It's ridiculous, right? Galactic Center, oh, that's like going to 7-Eleven. That's 25,000 light years away. And so I think that the conservative reserve of the second Capricorn and the mental high intelligence approach of the third Aquarius have a way of, you know, giving you tangible expression. They're like almost like a body that you can inhabit that makes you more adaptable to Earth. And this is Pluto in Aquarius is one of two major placements, scenes of major activity that is going to be highly motivating of some form of creative expression. And this is, I'm not really sticking to my notes here, but who cares? All right, so let's move to the fourth house, which has for quite a while been an impressive scene of outer planet activity. But first, what it means to have Pisces on the fourth, it's like, okay, so you're from outer space, and then you have as your foundation on this planet the ocean. That's basically what it's saying. The fourth is a place to seek grounding. The tap root is what the fourth house is sometimes thought of as. And so that grounding goes into water. This is even more ethereal. This is another expression of, wow, could this be any less tangible? And with that in mind, you may be, accustomed to doing a number of, well, the word in Freudian psychology is reaction formation, but that's kind of harsh. It's like, that's a little bit much, but it's kind of like that, where there's a certain thing that you feel, but it's very difficult to work with or express, and so therefore you'll default to the nearest similar. So the deeply emotional fourth and the seeking security, as it were, as a raft floating on water, finding expression in the mental realm back in the third, we're grounding all of this cosmic space alien stuff with Capricorn. Ah, there are banks here. Okay, there are universities here. I'll go teach at one. Oh, there's a patent office. How about that? What do they keep in patent offices? Patents. Oh, how do you get in there? You have to invent something. Oh, that's what I'll do. It's kind of like that. Now, this security place of the fourth has gotten kind of flooded by Neptune. And that goes back to 2011. And that is now finally ending. And so these two houses, two and four, that have as their main role helping you feel stable, situated, and grounded, have had the most planetary activity that would lead you to potentially feel exactly the opposite. And we might ask, why was that? So let's consider that when we come back. we could, and let's compare Capricorn second house and Pisces fourth house. And by the way, I think this is how you have fun with sun sign astrology. It is a meditation on a mandala, basically. And it's a mandala of spiritual and psychological and emotional states. And the hard, solid value system of the second that has been completely undermined by Pluto and therefore taken to a much deeper place. You could look at it as the mountain being honeycombed out or like going all the way down into the earth and kind of confronting ancestral values. And the fourth, which is pure water, particularly with Neptune in Pisces, are standing in a stark contrast. But what the transits both have is they're going to compel you to independence of thought and action. Now, that's asking for a lot on this planet. Most people don't give a rat's ass about independence of thought. They want to just get by, be accepted, be thought of as being cool and all of that stuff. But you have different karma. And in independence of thought and action often leads to a state of unpopularity. Or the certainly could lead to the feeling of one. There's a tremendous amount of pressure to be conforming at all times. With Pluto in Aquarius, this places you in the position of a thought leader, by the way, as someone who leads by setting the example of not going along with the crowd. And if you thought there was a lot of going on along with the crowd in 2020 and 21, wait till the big adventures of Pluto and Aquarius. And so we all got a practice run in 20 and 21, and now we need to be ready for the big game. Okay. All of this leads to the big, bold, exciting thing in your chart, which is the double conjunctions of Aries in the fifth house. Now, Aries, to my ear, has a special role in the history of consciousness because major astrological events in Aries also portend the major turning points in the history of the media, mass media, meaning technology, that completely reinvent and recreate the human experience. And you can go back pretty far and see examples of this, whether we're talking about the Gutenberg printing press, we're talking about telegraph, the development of radio, and so forth. All very, very strong Aries signatures. And what's happened is that basically people have been kind of driven insane by all of this electricity. And no one thinks of it that way. When you think of electricity, you don't even really think of it. You can flip on the bathroom light at 3 o'clock in the morning, and the only time you think about electricity is if it doesn't go on, and you wonder maybe if the power is out. So the electricity is invisible until it's not there, and then suddenly in its absence, it's very, very visible. That, by the way, will be the story of the internet if there are any disruptions to the digital environment indicated as possible by Pluto in Aquarius. But what the electrical environment has done is essentially drive people out of themselves and out of any meek sense of self-awareness they may have had and into these, what I think of as electric tribes. Everything's a tribe or a cult now. Have you noticed this? Like, people use the word tribe all the time, and then the actual behavior of many organizations, websites, and so forth is extremely cult-like, and people love being part of this. And this is about not being grounded in body and in one's clear sense of I am. And so without going too far into the backstory of these, and I've written about it many, many times in The Awakening, we're about to have the second conjunction of Chiron and Eris in Aries. The first one was in 71, 72. The previous ones involved the Gutenberg printing press, which nothing changed the Gutenberg life, existence, human existence, like the Gutenberg press. There were no printed books before this time. There was no the Bible before this time. There were a bunch of scrolls shoved in the back of churches and in synagogues, and then suddenly there were books everywhere. And then 500 years later, the next time it came around, suddenly there were electric lights and radios everywhere, and telegraph everywhere. That's faded away a little bit. So what this to me represents is a major claiming back of some element of your consciousness that you may not even be aware that you have been living without for a long time. Depending on how old you are, you may totally take for granted the state of the world. If you are older than that, the change seems to have come, if not slowly, it has come incrementally, like through a series of iPhone updates. Like, what was your first iPhone? You know, what was whatever kind of phone you have? What version are you up to now? Well, when did that happen? And with each one of those, there has been a ramping up of, well, for example, my iPhone is dumber than a box of rocks. The new iPhone has all this highfalutin artificial intelligence. And the effect of this on human feeling, creativity, experience, availability, community, relationship is only being whined about. Oh, now there are going to be a million social media lawsuits. Oh, wonderful. Now that the kids have been pelted with this shit for 20 years, oh, now we're going to have lawsuits? Well, that'll be real exciting. What good is that going to do? So that's how it works. But for you, and that by the way, is, I think, going to be a big theme of 2025, a very Chiron Eris and Aries. But for you, the creative potential is tremendous. Now, I don't know what people think when I say the word art or artist. And I don't mean anything like Rembrandt. I mean, I think Rembrandt was actually a pretty good painter. You look at that stuff and you think, that person did that, the Night Watchman or something. But what I do mean is a dynamic participation in existence where the thing that I'm calling art is a mutual shaping back and forth of you and something extrinsic to yourself about existence. And there is an internal shaping going on and an external shaping going on. And I realize many people spend their lives on commuter trains or driving an hour to get to work, and there's just not the energy to do that. And digital also, you know, digital also consumes a lot of creative energy inherently. But we're about to get a major surge on two accounts. First of all, this sustained conjunction of Chiron and Eris that extends well into 2026, but it peaks fairly early in 25. And this is like, I think, likely to feel like some kind of a sudden, shocking awakening to what has happened. It is the aspect for which I named this book, The Awakening. It's going to be a little like, if this happens, people acknowledging, oh, well, we're all having a lucid dream here. What about that? Or we're all at some big acid rave that, you know, that looks like Minneapolis. How do we, like, when do we take this drug? Well, we took it a little bit at a time, a little bit every day, and never goes away, and so forth. So there is this major provocation coming in your chart. There's a couple others, but this is a big one. And what I am proposing is that you go with this and open yourself up to a fully, you know, dynamic encounter with it. Dynamic means like on all sides. Encounter with existence where you really have a sense of what you are co-creating. Now, I mean, there were times when, you know, many people weren't that creative, or somebody might have written in their journal or liked to paint. I mean, there was always some of this, you know, had their thing. But all of a sudden now, with creative tools basically everywhere, a lot of people have dabbled. And I am proposing that you go beyond that dabbling and into some real exploration and find out what that is. I honestly don't know where the time and bandwidth is going to come for this, but a lot's going to change under this astrology. And that's because part two involves the departure from Pisces, where things kind of disappear under the sea, like those Tic Tac Mint UFOs, into Aries of Saturn and Neptune at about the same time. And it's almost like Saturn is chasing Neptune into Aries, because Neptune, though it moves slower, is going to be entering Aries first, will be followed by Saturn. They'll both retreat back into Aries, and there'll be a conjunction in 26, right smack on the Aries point. And this is encouragement to keep your channels open and to keep your relationship to existence creative. Creative means something other than consumptive, right? We think a lot of consumptive stuff is creative. You know, build your own taco. You know, design your own bowl of soup. That's just consumption. Creative always comes with a sense of risk. I mean, I guess there are people who would definitely be concerned about certain kind of risks with their taco. They might put too many habanero peppers on it, and you know that would have a result. But this is more like, letting yourself admit that you see things that other people wouldn't necessarily be that happy about. It's often a good bellwether of some form of virginality, is if you're concerned about the effect that your idea might have. And I suspect that between Chiron, Eris in Aries, and Saturn, Neptune in Aries, and Pluto in Aquarius, there will be plenty of opportunity for you to experiment and push on, you know, the status quo. Now, I mean, I realize this may be kind of a pipe dream for some people, and the way the world is going, we seem to be being hit with more and more bullshit every day. Just a number of forms, my little business, how to file by the end of the year to be fully in compliance with everything and everyone, nice and tidy at the end of 24, was ridiculous. There's always some new bullshit being foisted. Did you have to register your business with the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network? Hardy Boys mystery? How to file a fucking form. With the thankfully Eli filed it for me. The Financial Crimes Enforcement Network. Really? Really? So multiply that by a lot. That's the way things are going. They want us on central bank digital currency, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Make no mistake, the effect, the net effect, the function of all of this is to eat your creativity. The net effect of the digital environment, the AI environment, the deep fake environment, the Web 3.0, fourth industrial revolution, internet runs everything, is all to eat your creativity. 2008 or something, I was joking about rice cookers connected to the internet, thinking, that's funny. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Well, yeah, now it's true. Now, basically, you can get every appliance with an IP address. All of this is promulgates technology for its own sake, which is the sake of control, and it eats humanity. This is why you have a glorious opportunity and invitation to not have your humanity eaten by fully participating in existence and in life, by figuring out what creative means to you, figuring out what art means to you. And I contend that art is where there is two things, pattern recognition and a risk taken. Pattern recognition and risk. So when you feel panicky at something that you're doing, photographing, painting, writing, you're on the right track. You're on the right track. They're probably not going to kick the door down for you, but you know, you have to watch out for some of these cults and tribes. You know, where it might be better that you not announce your existence. Or try to get too involved in them. But the idea here is not for any form of public recognition. The idea that I'm trying to express here is, okay, what are the remaining places where a human can be human? A frightening thought is, imagine a young person today, someone, I don't know, 15 years old. What possibilities can they see for themselves that do not directly involve the internet? Now, we might include selling things, but even if we skip the selling things part, so let's see, plumber, woodworker, butcher, fromager, chef, all of the medieval professions are the only ones that will facilitate constructive or creative process that doesn't just make another damned app. Pretty much everything that we think of as accomplishment involves making an app of a certain kind. It's a website or, you know, a phone app or some bullshit like this. And so the entire future is being envisioned in terms of a digital future. And I'm curious where you feel like you can find your place someplace. There's plenty of good creation to do in the digital realm, but what's your, you know, what's your place where you have a refuge from the internet? I the other day I visited a kind of a dachshund breeding kennel, and you can be sure that in about 5 seconds I was on the ground, because they're only about 8 inches tall, making out with the cutest, friskiest dachshund through the fence. Okay, that's a good example of a non-digital activity. So, in terms of digital, the crisis of the digital tools is about how they all extend the central nervous system. It's very exciting at first. Then it becomes clear that this is overwhelming, it's all too much, and then it's painful. And so then there's the immediate impulse to withdraw, and that withdrawal multiplied out over a mass scale is the digital haze. So it's the extend and cut off. The digital sleepwalking is a two-stage process. The tool is very alluring. Oh my God, I can call someone up in China while I'm riding the D train in Brooklyn. Well, if you ride the D train, you might just call somebody up in China to see what that's like. I reckon it doesn't happen very often. What happens more is people are playing Angry Birds or checking their Instagram. And so when you, at any time, do not allow yourself to pull back out of fear of overstimulation, that's when you are doing your part to defeat the digital environment. I do also recommend interacting with animals as much as possible. Plants are fantastic. I tell you, I've been keeping plants in my apartment since I came back from Europe in 2007. I have never been more in love with my houseplants. To me, they seem every bit as alive as like cats and birds and dogs. With personalities and they're vividly alive, and this may my ability to observe this, and I'm a little bit of a hobby herbalist, and I have I'm friends with some divas and all this stuff, not rock stars, but things like, you know, Mullen. My ability to perceive plants may be a contrast to their, it may be kind of a reflection of their utter lack of zeros and ones. They don't have any. That's it. They're pretty much immune from that environment. And so anything, reading books, I think, very important. Not tablets, but reading books. Old stuff to keep your contact. And we could go down the usual list of, you know, be in nature. That's getting harder and harder to be in nature. The whole drone thing that was going on over the past month and a half is more normalizing the feeling of being stalked by drones. You know, now you'll get a hiking pass in a national forest, and they'll just be a drone that follows you everywhere you go. I mean, that's going to be real relaxing, isn't it? So that's what they're trying to get us used to. But contact with nature, very good thing. But more than anything, is not falling asleep with the tools in your hand. Okay, a couple of more houses. And I can sum these up pretty quickly. Logos Maki Maki in Libra. If you have access to the Libra reading, check out the Libra reading. I've done my best lineations of two minor planets, Logos and Maki Maki. You have these in the 11th place. This Logos in particular is going to give you a tremendous capacity to communicate with the small public, not the big public, the small public. The small public is the only public you want. You don't want the big public. Fuck the big public. You know, you don't want to be what's-her-name who just made $2 billion on tour. She doesn't really get much for that. But the small public is where you actually can meet people, where you can actually be conversant with them, and where you can genuinely appeal to their interests. Up in Virgo in the 10th is the invitation to, if you're looking for some kind of a winning formula, for example, to do, well, any form of a business, it's going to be something that's niche-oriented, very, very specific. And, you know, a lot of businesses succeed by doing something very specific, not general, but focused. And so the way to do that is to try on ideas, and ultimately it's going to come down to having a sixth sense of what might work, you know, and you have to decide when to get in and when it might not be working, and therefore when to get out. But the key is specificity, and that is what I suggest that you try. Okay, now there's two additional major planet transits, and these are both in relational houses. And so, obviously, I'm sitting here, you're sitting there. I do not know the status of your relationships, partnerships, domestic and or otherwise. But when Uranus gets to Gemini in July, that represents, I think it's either June or July, it's halfway through the year, represents a major shift in your environment. Now, this will certainly influence your, intimate partnerships with people, but it's also going to change your worldview. And there's going to be a lot of information in that. But the challenge is going to be that it's going to be somewhat chaotic, and it will be challenging to spot the good ideas from the not necessarily good ideas, the disruptions from the disruptive ideas that gain their success through that kind of shock to the system. And if you have a close partner, now would be a good time to map out with that person the true nature of what you want your relationship to be. One of the things people don't talk about in their relationships is, what if one of us changes, or what if the world changes? The thing with monogamous pair, dyadic, sorry, I fucking hate the word monogamous. Dyadic, pair bonded, how's that? Relationships, because mostly they're not very monogamous. Dyadic, pair bonded relationships, is that they do not account for the possibility of one of the partners changing or the world changing. And this is not about deciding that you hate each other. It is about growth, and it is about the fact that we live in a world that changes very, very, very quickly. So I would suggest mapping that out a little bit and being bold and learning something about your partner that you may not know, and keeping the conversation going until you make a discovery about a person, including someone you may have been with for a long time. and revealing to them things that, you know, you may have never revealed, and bringing the relationship into new territory. Around that time, Jupiter enters Cancer. And for you, this is quite revolutionary. This will develop through the second half of 2025. But I assure you that if you are not feeling like some kind of a creative monster now, you are likely to be feeling like some form of a creative monster when Jupiter goes out as far as making a 90-degree angle to Chiron, and the two rulers of your sign, Jupiter and Chiron, team up and create a kind of alchemy. Carlos Castaneda, I learned today, had Jupiter square Chiron. And so those books are a little dry now, but you know, you may find something there for you as this person who basically, whether in fact or in fiction, created himself into a sorcerer of a certain kind, which is for a Sagittarius on Earth in the 21st century, I would say that a sorcerer is a pretty good description of a career path that would work for you. It was not in the career book in junior high school. Your guidance counselor never mentioned that. Well, Judy, have you ever considered being a sorcerer? Well, Mr. Mackey, I haven't actually. What is that anyway? All right. Thank you for joining me. Another year of the Planet Waves annual for Sagittarius. Lots of love. On Boxing Day, 2024. Bye for now.